Hi, it's literally me. No new episode of Radio Go this week. We'll be back next week as normal. But I did recently get the chance to guest on the wonderful Life's a Pitch podcast, which producer Tom co-hosts normally with the great Matt Turner. Me and Matt pitched some fake movies. It was really good fun, and I think he'll enjoy it. So I'm popping it in this feed too. If you like it, search Life's a Pitch podcast everywhere and get involved because it's a super fun show. All right, bye.
Welcome to the Life's a Pitch podcast, the show where we pitch the best movies that will never get made. I'm Tom McGrath.
And I'm Matt Turner. This is the podcast where we ask you, the listener, to give us a title of a movie that doesn't exist. Yet.
We then collaborate to create a pitch for that movie, complete with casting, story beats, and sometimes even marketing.
Without further ado, this week's main feature is... family spy movies. Like Alex Rider. Like My Spy. Like The Pacifier. Like Spy Kids. Like Agent. Cody Banks. And Cody Banks 2, London 1, where he goes to London. and arguably, Austin Powers is a little bit blue, but it's sort of, you know...
I don't, I mean, you know.
It's a 15.
Yes, I think that certainly, like, there is humour to appeal to a certain age of kid. I'm not sure that it's a family movie, you know. I don't know if it's a movie that a family is sitting down to watch together. At least I didn't when I was of that age.
I certainly did, because I had grown up trying to watch South Park and... because that was new, that was brand new, and so like everything, all my media was like, you know, I wanted to watch Jackass, I wanted to watch all the, there was a lot of, I was living in this sort of like MTV2's just been made, and MTV's doing a lot of like transgressive nonsense, and they can't keep a lid on it anymore, Riley.
I hate to interrupt you, Matt. Just some questions. Who are you, who am I, and what is this?
Tom isn't here this week, as many of you might already know, but with me to pitch some of these family spy movies, I have comedian, podcaster, all-round legend, Riley Routh. The people at home already know what this is.
But I don't. I just appeared here out of nowhere in this featureless black void with you sitting opposite me. I have no idea what's about to happen. This is terrifying.
Well, this is the Life's a Pitch podcast, and if you'll rewind about 3 minutes, you can hear the instructions. So they
I love
will
when a
self-destruct.
Podcast starts with instructions.
They will self-destruct after 2 minutes, but you need to rewind and listen to those so that we can get that explosion out of the way for the credits to roll.
And that's why you have to record them fresh every episode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. This is that's the voice of Riley Routh, comedian, podcaster, and all around good GM.
Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure to be here on the Life's a Pitch podcast with you, Matthew Turner, pitching the best movies that'll never get made.
Oh my god, I got the full name. Gee whiz, that's I'm in trouble now.
yes, you are. And I'll tell you, I'm very annoyed at you for having me on your nice podcast.
Have you got a favorite? Have you got a favorite kind of family spy movie that has lodged in your early memories?
One that we haven't really talked about. I don't really know for sure if it counts, but I think Mr. and Mrs. Smith is just on the edge of being kind of a family spy movie. It's a little adult, but it's not intense, it's not gory or anything like that, and I definitely watched that as a kid. I don't know if I watched it literally with my family, but again, it balances that kind of domestic and exciting spy life. It's all about that duality, you know.
It's a sort of spy rom-com vibe, right? Like it's got that sort of what happens after the intensity of one of Bond's flings, when he settles down and, like, both of these exciting spies have to
To just move on continue with the rest their lives.
That's an interesting one. I haven't thought about that movie in a long time. I'm not even sure I saw it, but certainly I just had the idea that it was. I got the idea that it was sort of the parents from Spy Kids sort of movie.
Yeah, it kind of is. They rebooted it a couple of years ago as a TV series. Oh, nice. Because that's something that they like to do. Donald Glover was in it.
Was one of the exciting spies?
He was Mr. Smith. If you could believe it?
If you can imagine.
But it was only okay.
It was just fine. It was fine.
It was not much of anything, honestly.
Not worth watching over the good prestige TV,
mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. Just you know.
But this is kind of a dying genre, you know. This is kind of true in general. We talked a little bit about the sort of personality based buddy, you know, mismatched buddy movies, the My Spies and such. Beyond that, you don't get tons of these, like, kids being spies, you know, or kids doing these, sure, kind of grown-up things. I think things have maybe moved into a more fantastical realm, especially if we sort of think of a shift to animation and a shift towards superhero storytelling. We're kind of generally talking about more outlandish things. The Spider-Man movies have almost taken over this space in a way.
I mean, like, Spider-Man Homecoming has, quite a lot in common with a teen comedy meets a kind of tense spy movie.
Yeah,
right?
He's got to do sneaking around. He's got to look in that warehouse for stuff. I was looking, because the sum total of preparation that I do when I'm invited on to the Life's a Pritch podcast is I look at tropes for the kinds of films that we're talking about, and one that people mentioned.
It's more than I do.
Well, you're an old pro at this stage. What is this, episode 2500 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
One of the ones that people I saw mentioned was the hero and the villain having a social meeting before they know the truth about who each other are, or before they're really able to act on it. You know, sometimes they do know. This is definitely happens a lot in Bond, right?
Where they
meet at a cocktail party, and neither one of them can make a scene, or maybe they don't even know the true threat at that stage, but they have, like, a cordial discussion laced with threats, and Spider-Man has that too, you know?
Yeah, the best scene in the movie. I think that, weirdly enough, I'm trying to think if that happens a lot with other kinds of, like, those more more traditional, those more goofy, like, schlocky family spy movies. And I don't know if I can't think of any of those kinds of things.
It's harder to threaten a child, isn't it? Not impossible, but it is harder to kind of do that lace with threat kind of monologuing.
But they'll also be, like, nearby an interaction with that character that they get a bad vibe from them or whatever. And then, like, there'll be a situation where they'll kick one of their toys out of the way, or, like, they'll chew a dog or something, you know, that's sort of... And then the kids get a reason to hate this person rather than the fact that they are buying up all of the oil
the world's
fields.
Supply of uranium.
Yeah. I think we should just get to pitching some movies.
I'd be thrilled to do so. Let's do it.
So, from Katie Cutest Princess, we've got MI6-year-old.
I love MI6-year-old. That's great. This makes me think that we're talking about, you know, a lot of the movies that we've been thinking about, it's one exceptional child who is not like other kids, and they are the hero, and they are our sort of view into this world. This sounds like a whole division of kids, right? Yeah. The MI6-year-old sounds like where all of the spies who work at MI6 like take their kids. It's like a nursery.
Oh, it's like a creche.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. But when disaster strikes and terrorists invade the MI6 building, the whole place is put on lockdown.
And yes,
these 6-year-olds are the only ones who, for reasons, can save the day. And they have to work as a team. I'd like this to have, I was going to say Breakfast Club vibes, but I guess when you're, like, Breakfast Club is more about being a teen. These 6-year-olds are not really filled with angst in the same way. But what do 6-year-olds fight about? Like, you know, because we want to create some internal tension here, right?
We do, yeah, for sure. Oh, well, I think that, like, we always in this situation, if we're going to paint this picture, then we want to have a newcomer to the whatever it's like a primary school, right? Yeah, 6-year-olds they're at a primary school, they're in year 3 in our British Pars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you want like an audience identification character who this is their first day. Maybe their dad has just been hired.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. And I think this person, they've just been brought in because, you know, dad was... We'll think of why the dad was brought in at some other point, but it's probably
I want, like, a hapless dad. I want this to be a Bryan Cranston role, actually.
Oh, like, that's perfect.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, totally. And he's like... He's in MI6 for some reason, but we're not quite sure what it is. But I think what's important is that this kid is outside of the social class of MI6's usual fare, right? Mm. There is already a Bond-style character who has, like... And there are, like, 5 brothers, all of whom look very much like the Bond character, all from different mums. They all get delivered to, to this primary school.
So you want, just for casting this movie, you want to go out there and find, like, 6 siblings who are all about the same age.
And they all have the hair. That is like in notably different styles, but you can tell, you know, parents who are watching the movie are all like, oh, I get it.
That's one for the grown-ups. That's funny. Yeah. And so they're the top dogs in this primary school. They're the most popular, the most sort of established.
I suppose so, yeah.
This is kind of a cool opportunity for the movie to indulge in lots of different tropes, right? Because we could have a 6-year-old equivalent of Q, right? We could have a gadget master.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Who's a quiet kid. They call him Q for quiet. And he's he's always like off in the corner, never really talking to anyone, just working on his gizmos, which of course turn out to be incredibly useful. So let's talk about this threat. Why is it that these kids are the only ones who can save the place? Is there some kind of lockdown procedure that means that, like, in the case of an emergency, they're the only ones who can travel through the building? You know, everyone else is stuck where they are.
I think maybe it's like, I think we need to thematically, these kids need to be beneath the notice of whoever's taking over, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They are an addended, they're not there. They're there because they're cast off and everything's locked down in that, like, they have access to, like, the network of the place. Hmm. So that they can, and I think we start with, you know, a thing where, like, they have special spy, like, screens where they, like, they hang their coat up on the coat hook, and then, like, next to it, like, a screen comes up and goes, like, good luck this morning, kid. And then it's like, it's Bryan Cranston, and he's like, everyone else's dad is saying good morning to them. Because he's already, we've been at work since 4 a.m. or whatever, wherever he is in the world. Oh, even on like detail.
Bryan Cranston's zooming in this entire performance. That's going to save us a lot of money down the line. Like,
Bryan Cranston is like, everyone else's dad is like, hey, good morning, kid. I hope you have a good day at school. Yeah. I'm just sneaking through some vents. Or
like hiding behind some boxes, hail of bullet fire over the top. Exactly. That kind of thing.
And Bryan Cranston is like leaning into like whatever like plant that they've bugged his office with, and he can't find the camera. He's like he's hapless. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I actually love this idea. You know, we mentioned the idea that it's Cranston's first day, or you know, that he's his first time on assignment. Maybe he is in the building. That's being locked down. He's the only one of these spies that is. Everyone else is out on foreign missions. You know, they've been sent out there. And one of the things we learn early on is that our evil terrorists who have taken over the place have falsified all those missions in order to get all of the other agents out of the building. Right?
Yes,
and so that's why Cranston is our sort of adult hero.
And okay, so the kid, the POV kid, is Q.
Of course.
Right? Is the POV, the kind of, our, Bryan Cranston's kid is our Q, who is going to be making, helping the other spies in the the other kid spies who are, like, much better at sports and much, you know, like better at climbing through vents and things.
And charismatic and able to like hide and all that stuff, yeah.
Is going to be helping them to open the doors from their like addended sort of like school place, which we'd have to do some postmodern design on this building to make it like so obviously a school attached to MI6. But
Alex Garland knows the guys to talk to. We're gonna get his production designers to make us a really fucked up looking crash. It's gonna be fantastic. It's gonna be great.
And I think that, like, so this kid knows how to hack the doors to get them in, knows how to help turn their like admittedly very high-tech school supplies an extending ruler and like an eraser that could erase a whole wall if you needed it to,
triple-sided right? sticky tape. All the gadgets, yeah.
All the gadgets, yeah. Now knows how to turn those into stuff that you could use for a spy thing.
Now here's the thing about a lot of these movies, right? These kids can't kill anyone. They can't hurt anyone. They can't even fight anyone. It's just off the table. And I think that something that's pretty common that we can probably utilize here is robots. Our evil terrorists have got robots, and that's how our lead character. Interestingly, like we would usually have cast the lead by now, but when we're talking about kids' films, we don't really bother.
It's hard to work, right? So we just say we don't have a move on.
We don't have a list of 6-year-olds.
No, we don't. But just what we do
for the benefit of any like government agencies that might be listening to this episode, we don't have a list of 6-year-olds.
We don't do that. We do, however, have the Life's a Pitch time machine, which can rewind Finn Wolfhard as much as you like.
Oh, fantastic! Great. Then I'm not worried. I think we fight robots, right? And we can use this tech whiz to disable the robots, get the robots on our side, send faulty data to them. We can kind of do all kinds of shenanigans with that.
Bryan Cranston is an MI6 scientist.
Yes.
And his kid, played by, let's say, Millie Bobby Brown, but rewound, has actually kicked out of her previous school for being too much of a prankster tearaway. And so, like, so what we're setting up for here is a cool custom stink bomb for knocking out the people who are any when we get to the end where we need an actual villain moment, you know, where it's not robots, then the stink bomb is the thing that goes through the pipes and you know, makes them all flee and fall into manure as they do in the end of every.
We could do
movie.
A classic callback situation like you're describing, where the opening sequence of our movie is our hero pulling off that prank at their old school, right?
But
we could film that whole thing like it's a spy caper.
That's the pre-sequence, right? The pre-title sequence,
and then all of the teachers and students running out of the school, holding their noses and screaming, putting a big clothespin on their nose, that sort of thing. And then we can call all the way back to that at the climax of our film, when they're able to do exactly the same thing, just with
We introduce the baddie, who is played by, I nearly went Alan Cumming. He's already done one of these.
Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs. And we introduce the baddie doing a very similar stunt, but in kind of terrorism, you know?
Yes,
he's
yes.
like, he's. You, there are other people, people are running out of that shopping mall, but because there's fire and things.
Are you leading into a, we're not so different, you and I, between our yeah, hero and
yeah,
villain?
Totally, yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
I think we'll be able to do that, but only if Millie Bobby Brown's character is able to be like, I'm six. We're pretty different.
Yeah,
like, you've got a lot of stuff going on that I'm not thinking about.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
How does it end? She throws the sink bomb. All of the terrorists have no choice but to flee. And Bryan Cranston has electrified the doors of MI6.
Yes.
So they do all die, but not because of her.
I think
we've threaded that needle.
He's electrified the doors. He's Bryan Cranston's been trapped. The thing that got him hired was he was able to put himself into like his brain could control the lots of little robots that could help, you know, beeping and booping around, and they all got hacked, but like his mind was able to electrify the doors
and we're building to some nice reunion between the dad and the daughter, but who cares about that?
Exactly. Who cares about that?
That writes itself.
It's a pitch, don't worry about it.
Exactly. That's a good movie. I'd watch that movie.
That's a good movie. That's MI6-year-old. So, from Hey Tom, .. I've put the .. in there as an ellipsis to mean there's way more of this name.
More than we're inclined to read.
Yeah. We've got the KGB is for life, not just for Christmas.
All right, okay. I mean, I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes for a very lighthearted movie. So are we going into the slightly harder-edged side of family movies?
I think that in this situation, with this particular title, they're drawing obvious reference to Dogs for Life, not just Christmas, which means that you just have to have a KGB agent being kept as a pet.
Oh, it's a dog is our hero. Are we making an animated movie?
Why not? But
why
like
not?
we can you can always do a talking dog like situation. Like, you could have a real dog who has a special collar on that allows it to speak. You could have a KGB agent who has been put into has had his psyche transferred during the Cold War, was transferred into a dog, and he's just been hanging out ever since.
I've got a very important question for you, Matt, and I want you to think really carefully about it, because your answer to this question, I think, determines whether this movie gets greenlit or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What kind of dog? Like, what breed of dog is the? And remember, it's going to be speaking with a Russian accent throughout the entire movie. What breed of dog? Because in my head, I don't know why, I immediately went to bulldog.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's right, but that's just where that was my first thought.
I had in my head, it's maybe this is because I saw one yesterday at my work, but a really, really big dog, not like a husky, but like it's got the same shape as a husky. I don't know what breed it was, but it was like brown.
Okay, sure. Like quite fluffy brown.
Yeah. And just
that.
The size of a horse.
All right, I'm into that. So a scheme has gone awry, and this top KGB agent has has been killed in action, right?
Yes.
But don't worry, because Russia's top scientists were able to preserve an imprint of his brain.
Yeah.
But in order to keep it intact.
In the moment, the only bodies they had.
It's the only one that's available yeah. is this dog.
And in being transported, I don't know whether they then send that dog to America to spy or... probably yes, right?
Yeah.
But then, like, it gets caught by a dog catcher in the suburbs of America, at which point it's, like, adopted by a family. And Beethoven situation.
Yeah. This can be a whole caper that has multiple phases of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I'd like one of them, a little later down the line, to be a rivalry with another dog that turns out to be a CIA agent who's undergone a very similar procedure. And the two of them are at odds with one another.
Yep.
Because then what we can do is, we already talked about the social scene that the hero and the villain have before they, you know, are fully antagonistic
really
with each other.
Yeah.
And it can just be them sniffing each other's butts.
Yeah, and there's like barking for no reason,
just checking out what's what, you know. And the owners can be like super apologetic, like, I'm sorry, he's not usually so mad, you know. Only gets this mad when the US soccer team is playing on the TV, you know. That's usually the only time he shows this kind of antagonism.
This guy's just really into baseball.
Yeah. And then the other owners can be like, oh, don't worry about it, you know, our dog's a sweetie. He usually only gets mad when we lower the flag to half mast, or we make borscht for dinner.
loves borscht. Yeah.
So a bunch of bullshit happens, right? We can go through a dog catcher phase. We can go through like being stuck in the pound, making friends with some of the other dogs, trying to gather intel from them about anything they've seen. Because I think maybe part of the powers here is that not only can the dog talk, but also it can communicate with other dogs.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, can the dog communicate with humans?
I guess it can.
It just chooses not to while it's undercover.
Well, this is the question. The question is who is the point of view character? Because, you know, my instinct would have been to have it be a Paddington situation, right? Or the Beethoven situation, which is the same situation.
Exactly.
Which is to say, Dad doesn't want this the family to keep the pet. Kid wants to keep the pet. Then Kid discovers that the pet can talk.
Can talk in a heavy KGB Russian agent. Accent. Yeah. I tell you what, actually, then in that case, and I love that, scrap my idea of meeting another dog who's a US agent. I think the dad should be a CIA spy, right?
Oh, right. Yeah,
and that's
okay.
How and our KGB audience identification character, I guess, has finagled his way into this specific household.
Oh, man.
In order to, because bring your dog to work day is coming up.
So who
it's only
like
days away.
Who here is the villain? Is it the CIA?
I think that, like, obviously the title has kind of forced us to make the KGB the audience identification, the hero. We wouldn't normally do that, but what do we give a shit, you know?
Here's the way I would do this. What I would do is have this family not be like live, maybe they live next, so the dog is in with this family by accident. This is Scarlett Johansson
using her best Russian accent.
She got caught, she got adopted by this family. And she's like, oh, bloody hell. Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to run away from this family. She's making all her plans to run away from this family when she finds out that next door lives this old guy who just happens to be the director controller of the CIA. Right?
Yeah. and bring your dog to work days only days away.
In this moment,
yeah,
right, the kids are making friends with his dog, and
we cut from their perspective, where it's a very heartwarming, like a classic family movie scene of bonding, yep, with this new pet, and then cut back to his internal monologue, being like, "These fools have no idea. Their American way of life will be destroyed."
And I think basically they win her round, right? They win Scarlett Johansson round. This is basically like a movie about a dog plotting to end the way of life of a family and their next door neighbor, the director of the CIA.
Finding out
they're not so bad, they discover that the CIA are doing awful experiments on dogs in their back, in the basement behind this, the director's house.
Yes, because of course, the director controller would be doing these experiments in his house.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not even really his house. It's a cover for a facility.
Matt, you've thought of everything.
And they're doing horrible experiments on other dogs because they're trying to replicate the accidental thing that happened to Scarlett Johansson. Oh,
they have the files on this. They had a mole.
There's a mole, which was another accident, actually.
Yeah, that was the previous experiment. Sometimes comedy is a game about speed, you know? It's just about who gets there first.
And I think that's basically that's the movie. There you go.
I think so. They have to, like, the animals are the winners of this movie.
I think we can stop the experiments on animals.
We can even bring in like a US dog or even a US mole, and they can join forces against the humans.
They all work together.
And exactly. Then that also like I takes think the, having takes a the mole national in politics out of it as well.
Yeah, as I think having a mole in their operation is and there being like a side character who's played by classic trick.
Who could voice a mole?
American Office. What's his name?
Steve Carell.
Yeah, Steve Carell as a mole.
Yeah, I see it. Like, I think he could go a little nasal and do like a bureaucratic kind of sound and voice. I'm into that. And it's animals win, humans suck.
Exactly.
So they go off
this happy family. They stopped all the animal experiments now.
Nice. Yeah. And they think, like, in their head, they've been the heroes of this movie the whole time and have had no idea that the dogs and the moles and the dogs and the children. And
the children are in the know, but not the adults.
Okay, I love this. Yeah, that sounds like a classic film.
Mm. One of the films of all time.
What was that one called again?
The KGB is for life, not just for Christmas.
I hope that Hey Tom ... feels that we did that one justice. Because we may have veered ever so slightly, but you know. We're more or less on brief, you know.
We're totally there.
What do you want from us?
So from Phil Walters, we've got Mum's the Word.
Ooh, I like this one. Okay, this is good because we just did a sort of father-daughter relationship. So let's try a mother-son relationship. In what ways are these significantly different? I don't know. All I know is that Cate Blanchett is our lead.
Okay, cool. And she's presumably like...
I want her in full Lydia Tarr mode. I want her to be like the baddest bitch in the room. I want her to be really cold and unfeeling and the perfect spy, right? That's kind of. I think... or should we maybe do one where the parent is not a spy? Is that maybe the appropriate way to go about this?
I think whatever way this goes, I think maybe she does have to be because like it feels to me like she is a spy and keeping that a secret from someone else is like in a more domestic capacity is the center of this, right? Well, like whether it's because kids are helping their mum date or whatever, or you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's...
I think that Cate Blanchett is a super spy who has been put on leave following a job gone wrong.
Yes.
And her son is very happy about this because it means that she's back at home. She's kind of going crazy at home because she's not used to all that kind of domestic life. That's not that's not where she sort of thinks that she belongs. When one night intruders break in and enemies of Cate Blanchett come in and they kidnap her. I'd like this to be the son has to go and save her.
Interesting.
Right? So I think that, like, you know, Cate Blanchett is gone.
Yes.
He the son, who's played by a time traveled Henry Cavill, as a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah.
he has to follow the clues. Right, he's the only other one in the house, I guess, and has to sort of figure out what's happened, where she's gone, who's taken her.
This sounds very serious, Riley.
It does sound very serious. So let's put a talking duck in there as his sidekick.
So can I maybe make a couple of alterations,
please? But the talking duck is non-negotiable. That stays.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But what if Mum has come back, she has been put on leave, and it's like extended leave. She started dating, right?
Okay, yeah.
And the kid is not happy about that because he wants, you know, he doesn't like a new person in the house. He doesn't want this schlub Charlie Day turning up and trying to win him over and stuff, being this sort of stepdad like figure.
Oh, this is such a good Charlie Day role. Sort of like trying to be charming and appeal to the kid on his on his terms, and the kid not being that's sick. That's good casting. To replace his deceased dad, played in archival footage by Glenn Howerton.
Sure, yeah, why not? Why the fuck not? Like, Charlie Day's there, doesn't know that she's a spy,
but the son does know.
Yeah. And obviously kid's like knows that he can't tell this guy that his mum's a spy, but you know, how else is he going to explain the talking duck, which is like a robo friend that's been made for him? A gadget that she brought home.
Not to mention the like strange disappearances every so often. Charlie Day finds his way like accidentally into like an office drawer and finds like 8 passports. In different names,
and he's like, "Am I gonna get scammed? Is this what this is? Is like is this a con artist?
Yeah,
is this?" And he's like, "Is this? Are you 32?" He's like pointing at pointing at Henry Cavill, aged down to be a 10-year-old boy.
Yes,
he's like, "Are you 32? Are you really 32? You're her accomplice."
This is great. So are you suggesting maybe that she doesn't get kidnapped, or do you want that?
I'm saying she does get kidnapped.
These two are our buddies.
Yes, exactly. So at first the kid's like trying to cover for her because he's like, oh, she must have just gone on a thing, but she normally leaves at XYZ. So he needs Charlie Day to give him a lift locations where his mum usually leaves things.
But he has to make up excuses as to why he wants to go to these places.
Yes.
Have nothing to... Maybe our kid hero is covering by saying, oh, she just had to go for another business trip, right?
Yes.
So our kid is the only one who knows the gravity of this, right?
Yep.
And then, has to come up with excuses for like going to visit these like CD locations and have Charlie Day bring him along.
And it's like, why exactly do you need to go downtown again?
Yeah.
And he's like,
I need new sunglasses from the sunglass hut, but it has to be this specific one.
Yes, he needs new sunglasses from the sunglass hut.
Is that you being the talking duck?
Yeah.
Voiced by? That was sort of Patrick Stewart.
Wrote, wrote, I was Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, okay, sure. In Donny English mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Perfect.
Or Zazu, you know.
From
Lion King, yeah.
Fair. I love this. I think that like this has game night energy. Insofar as like there's sort of this back and forth of like who knows what's real, who knows what's not.
We're keeping the trappings domestic whilst the stakes are spy thriller.
Yeah. Maybe our kid hero starts to suspect Charlie Day, right? Wouldn't you in that situation?
Yes.
You know, if we know that our mother's a spy and this interloper starts to come in, naturally be a little bit suspicious. Maybe he accidentally lets slip a piece of information that he shouldn't know, and now our kid has to work with this guy while figuring out, is he behind the whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely. But it turns out he's following up. He's a corporate spy who is following a cover profile. He was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, her last job, she was working at, or like one of the jobs she was on, she's working as a, that's where they met. No, she can't have been on a job when they met, right? It has to be like her intentionally finding love.
Not necessarily. Like it really depends on, you know, she could have had any kind of cover. These are details. This is a pitch. Yeah, we have
not
worried
too much about it.
But what I love about that is it gives Charlie Day like a mid act two turn, where he can go from being the sort of bumfuzzled every man who's like confused and bewildered by everything that's happening. We can get the reveal that the kid knows that his mother's a spy and tells us to Charlie Day. We can then get the second reveal that he knew all along and is actually a super cool spy of his own in his own way. You know,
I think that it is a surprise to Charlie Day, because I think if Charlie Day knew all along, then the kind of love angle of this is diminished. But I think that he's a super cool spy in his own way that is going after one of her cover identities.
Okay, which, sure, yeah.
Her civilian job, like, you know.
He doesn't know the full extent of her things, but he's got his own stuff going on. So
he's a cop trying to track down, like, what's going on in this mysterious building that, like, no one ever talks about, nobody ever comes out of, because they're all going out in, like, laser cars or whatever, right? Like, it's
actually like the front that this spy organization uses is a Warhammer shop.
Yes.
And everyone finds it very suspicious that all these super slick looking, well dressed adults are going into the back room of this Warhammer shop.
And you know, I went in there and there was nothing but little guys.
That's what they're supposed to be, Charlie Day. That's exactly how it works, you know. I think that, like, if we take it back to the title, obviously the end goal here is to rescue our mother character, but she's also got to be able to like have been doing something while she's been kidnapped, right? I don't think, especially if she's supposed to be the super capable spy, I don't think this is like a classic like damsel in distress kind of situation.
So is there
a third reveal on top of all of this?
I don't
know how elaborate we want to go with it, but has she been involved? Does she know that this was going to happen?
You know? I think that like she knew she was going to get kidnapped. I think that what happens is Charlie Day and the kid get like captured trying to nearly finding her, and then she ends up being the one that breaks out with the distraction that they've caused. They're like trying to grill these two for information.
Yeah.
Charlie Day keeps talking about little guys, little plastic guys, and
some of them have guns, some of them have shields. I don't know what's up.
I want to keep his like bumbling.
You don't want to lose that entirely.
That's why I make him a cop, right?
Sure.
Like, that's why I make him someone who's super clued out, but has a reason to want to look into this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And then she saves them both. And then do we have a happy family at the end of this movie?
I think so. Why not? It's a family spy movie. We've got a happy family where they all get hired by the spy zone and they all go on family missions. So we have, like, the last scene is them at a Butlins, right? Or a resort.
American equivalent of Butlins. I don't know what they have over there.
I guess they just go to, like, you know,
Six Flags.
Hawaii, don't they? Like, well, yeah. They're in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, sunning the kids sunning himself on the beach. Mm-hmm. Henry Cavill, the child,
the 10-year-old Henry Cavill, on the beach. Yeah.
And there is a something going on, and like they Charlie Day is like jet skiing along in the distance and it's like, oh, they went on a holiday together.
And then they find out
that actually what's happening as mum skydives in like parachutes in towards a location, and like they are trying to infiltrate the volcano lair of this of this far-flung thing, and it's all three of them working on a mission together.
Yeah, I love that. That sounds great. I think that's a good movie. I like all the layers of reveals and the different character dynamics going on there.
Mum's the word. Yeah.
Charlie Day and Cate Blanchett together at last. Yes. It's what the world's been crying out for.
It is what the world's been crying out for. Well, that was all of our titles for this week.
What a nice time. Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
Oh, you're so welcome, Riley. Mm. I've had a great time too. And thank you for coming on the show. Mm. If people wanted to hear your voice some more, and maybe even sometimes hear the normal host of this podcast, Tom's voice.
Yes.
Where might they go to do that?
Well, they might go to a little podcast called Radio Go that I host, that Tom co-hosts with me. He's sort of my sidekick on that show. It's a comedy interview show.
Same here as well. Yeah.
Yeah, he's your sidekick. You consider yourself the main host.
That's why I definitely know how to run this show.
Yeah, clearly. Wait, does that mean I've been your sidekick for this whole show? I had no idea. I would have been more subservient. No, Radio Go is an improvised comedy show where I get a funny person on, they play a character, I don't know who they are, and I interview them. And Tom's there, and he usually causes problems for everyone on purpose. It's chaos, it's really fun. Check it out. Just go to radiogo.show, and you can listen to every episode so far.
Yeah, you're both very funny in that show, and all your guests are very good.
Thanks so much.
In fact, I went and saw you on the stage.
Yes, I went on a stage, and we did the show there. That was at the end of March. It was great fun. You were kind enough to let me put a promo at the top of a Life's a Pitch episode, which I really appreciated. And I think that was the main reason that 500,000 people came to the show. Was specifically because ticket sales were not good before I put the promo on Life's a Pitch, and then as soon as it's like within 20 seconds of that episode dropping,
the feed drop did some work, right?
Yeah, my views, it was just like my phone was just like making the cash register noise over and over again. I didn't even know
which
it could
is not
do
something
that.
It can do. Yeah.
I didn't set it to do that. I didn't download that app, but here we are. No, thank you so much for coming to that. It was a great time, and hopefully we're going to do more live shows too in the near future. So if you're in Sheffield, keep an eye on the same website.
Well, I recommend you do so. Also, if you want to hear more Riley, go and listen to The Tide.
The Tide,
a little while back,
improvised role playing show that I did with Matt a couple years ago. All episodes available now. It's like a limited series. It's awesome. Tide.show.
It's quite short, so if you haven't heard it and you want to feel some feelings, then I recommend you going to Tide.show.
Actually, I think that the entirety of The Tide could probably fit inside this podcast. this episode that we've been recording.
Quite possibly.
I think so. Yeah. That's efficiency.
Especially because I'm about to really bloat it the thing we do now, which is to say thank you to everyone who gave us titles this week.
Do you need me for this bit?
Yeah, I do. I need you
really?
to sort of look confused. It doesn't work unless you sit there looking confused.
Okay, it doesn't work if there's somebody here not enjoying it.
No, exactly.
That's crucial to the bit.
So if you want to give us titles in the future, you can always go to our social medias, which is of course lifetopitchpodcast.bisky.social on Blue Sky, or facebook.com/lifetopitchpodcast, and patreon.com/lifetopitchpodcast. It is a Patreon is a place that you can go to give us money as well as titles. You don't have to give us money in order to give us titles, please just give us those anyway, but the money is what keeps the show going. And when you do give us money, you get to inflict something on us that you're about to witness. That is that you can put whatever name you want into patreon.com, and I have to read it at the end of each of the episodes. So
when you say that, you have to read it at the end of each episode, that's a self-inflicted rule. Like let's be clear, like there is not somebody with a gun pointed at your head just off screen making you read the Patreon name.
That you know of.
You're right. I can only see one angle. Damn this Zoom.
I need to thank Spanky. Seriously, the worst. The calendar veil is weakening. The months continue to shift. Stephen D. Thomas. Orcs are dorks will live again. https://www.youtube.com/ @orcsaredorks/podcasts. That's a whole ass.
Keep going.
Fingers to hand. I have lost literal gallons to you. Here are the new months: January, February, Moths, April, Vortex, June, July, The Last Samurai, September, Baker's Grunion, Pylon Removery, Baker's Grunion. That's it. Are you happy? We're not, just worried. James Delaney, let's pause the recording for a minute. I need a cup of tea and a shit. Just kidding. I no longer digest. I'm a Necron. This name intentionally left blank. Look at your hands, Tom. See that? You're a Necron. You'll have to do that when he hears this show. Why are there little guys in my phone? How do I remove them without toothpasting them? Do I need to push food into my phone? Oh, shit, I'm Baker's Grunion? Brent Black. Become a Necron and never worry about choking on your food again. Hey, Tom. Hugh Valentier and Demi D. Attlee here. RSPCN officers investigating Necron abuse. Can you show us your freezer? Tom, your two new Necrons are on the way and should arrive in a few weeks. They are not painted, but will arrive screaming and naked. Joseph Hegarty. Fellas, I am shit. I'm Baker's Grunion. Could you email me the email address linked to it, as I can't remember it, so can't change it. Tom, please release my vengeful spirit from your freezer. I am a Necron. I still don't know how to spell Baker's Grunion, and at this point I'm too scared to ask. The serial dragon in his retirement, hoping to reconnect with an ugly duckling, more like a hot piece of goose. Krennic of Barad-dûr, an epic podcast coming May the 4th, 2026. I do my daily prayers to the BBC. Earth Update version 8.9009 devs identified a bug that allows users to gain max skill in interstellar propulsion engine design by thinking of cows gently mooing whilst looking at the Visit Uttoxeter website. Website taken offline and cows made sad while a patch is developed. Who volunteered immediately? Hang on, who volunteered immediately? Just Tom's parents, who volunteered immediately and then didn't show up. Baker's Grunion. Hark, the Herald Angels sing of the second Patreon account I created to join this stupid ARG. Alan's Warhammer podcast on a big tower near the station with no guests other than Orky Mike, who volunteered immediately. Who volunteered immediately? Please volunteer, Mike. My Middle-earth strategy battle game needs your command of the forces of Mord. Zoe! The Oracle has spoken. The new characters has weakened the portal between worlds. Do not speak the name Orky Mike three times, lest he be summoned from the Orb Realm. God damn it, I've not been chewing brioche for ages. Get your act together. Time to rotate those hubcaps and get this party started. And finally, this is the news. NHS joint ops disrupted amid bone cement supply problems.
It's just always a privilege to have my time wasted by you, Matt. always a delight. Thank you so much. Yep.
You're so welcome. We end the show, as always, with a Yes, Very Clever award. This is an award we give to people who have kind of participated in giving us titles, as always, but, they just sort of like did a little play on a different movie that already exists.
Usually. The titles that when you see them, they make you say, Yes, Very Clever.
Yeah, there you go. And this week, I have forgotten who it is. There it is. From Phil Walters, we have My Auntie from Uncle.
Yes.
It's like The Man from Uncle.
Very clever. Yeah. That is a family spy movie.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
Good stuff.
Well, until next time, I have been Matt Turner.
I've been Riley Rath. And remember who pitched it.